You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The Cardinals lose this game 6-3, and to me, the problem once again, we can point to the offense. We can point to the inability for this Cardinal team, a lineup that was supposed to be one of the stronger lineups in the National League. We've talked about how this needs to be a top 10 offense if the Cardinals are going to be competitive for a wild card spot or for the NL Central. It's got to be on the backs of this lineup. And today, on Wednesday against the Oakland Athletics, the Cardinals had their opportunities against Oakland starter Paul Blackburn. We talked yesterday on B-Shafe Daily about this matchup and said, look, Blackburn hasn't gotten many strikeouts this year. He's pitched to some contact, but he's got good numbers. Cardinals need to be careful and make sure to make him work. Don't let him get hyper-efficient with his pitches and be able to breeze through six or seven innings on 80, 85 pitches. Make sure you make this guy work. Well, the Cardinals listened. They did that part. Blackburn walked five Cardinal batters in 5 2/3. He gave up six hits, but on the other side of things, he also found the swing and miss that he had been longing for, evidently so far this season. Seven strikeouts of Cardinal hitters over those 5 2/3 innings, which I would have to imagine is a season high for a guy that came into the game with only 11 Ks on the year. But between six hits and five walks, I don't believe he hit anybody with a pitch, but that's 11 base runners that we're talking about for the Cardinals that they had plenty of opportunity to do some damage against this Oakland starter and then be able to force them into their bullpen a little more early than they otherwise would have. Look, Oakland, for all of the flaws that we talk about, we know the team is moving and they're a young lineup and you know, they lost a bunch of games last year. They have a really nasty bullpen. I made the comment that I said it's low-key, kind of a nasty bullpen, and then I thought about it and said maybe high-key. I mean, they have a number of relief pitchers coming out that throw 100 miles per hour, that have nasty off-speed stuff. We saw TJ McFarland, former Cardinal, finish out the sixth inning for Blackburn. He got a pretty big out with the Cardinals having runners on base there. And then three relievers, two of which I've never heard of, come on and make it happen. Mason Miller is their closer. I guess I should say one of which I was not familiar with. I knew the name Austin Adams. He's been around for a little while, but he's doing some great things, has a zero ERA on the season with five holds. And then Lucas Erceg, I have no idea how to say this guy's name. He's 28 years old. He's got a a two ERA, more strikeouts than innings pitched. They just have some very interesting relief pitchers. And then Mason Miller is the guy that I knew to expect. If the Oakland A's were to get a lead in this series at any point, he would be the closer that you'd have to worry about. And the Cardinals, they didn't spend much time worrying. Two strikeouts, no hits in the inning. They did draw a walk against him, but Cardinals lose this one 6-3. This is B-Shafe Daily, by the way, starting off the podcast by just getting right into it. I know people have said before, I don't like the long intro. Well, let me know if you like this any better. Let me know if you like this formatting and if this is something I should stick with. Feel free, whether you're new to the podcast or you've been around for years, chime in the comments below. Subscribe as well on YouTube. If you are new, in the lower right-hand corner, you'll see the red subscribe button. You can click that. We're so close to having 3,000 subscribers on the channel. I will be really excited when we can maybe reach that level. So I appreciate you guys for joining me as always. But yeah, let me know what you think about just getting right into it. Don't mess around with the intro. There have been times where I've kind of tinkered with it, and this time I said no intro. Let's go ahead and jump right in. But let's not lose that momentum while we're at it. We'll continue talking about this Cardinal offense, and I want to play a clip from the post-game courtesy of Bally Sports Midwest. You'll hear the question from Jimmy the Cat Hayes to Ollie Marmol about the way the Cardinals made Paul Blackburn work in this game. Again, I look up and see five walks, and you're not able to score more than three runs against him in 5 2/3. That's disappointing. You think, wow, they must have not really gotten many hits. No, they had six hits as well. To have that amount of traffic on the bases, you're erasing some of it on double plays, which is unfortunate and untimely and all of those things. But getting the take of Cardinal manager Ollie Marmol on the fact that they weren't able to really cash in on the opportunities that they had against the Oakland starter.
On the other side of it, you guys made Blackburn throw a lot of pitches and work. Was there more there?
Yeah, that first inning where Newt hits the hard ground to the third, did his part. But it was right at the guy. So it's a frustrating one. You want to win that one and sweep and go home and feel good about it and enjoy an off day. Hit some balls hard. They got caught. And overall, just didn't produce enough offense to give ourselves a shot today.
That's Cardinal manager Ollie Marmol, courtesy of Bally Sports Midwest on Wednesday afternoon in the postgame. Cardinals lose to the Oakland A's 6-3. And one of the plays referenced there by Ollie was the play in the first where the Cardinals had ducks on the pond. They had a base hit. Goldie reaches via walk. And then you get the ground ball from Newt Barr. It really appeared as though Lars had beat it out. Newt had beat out the double play turn there at first base. It was a bang-bang play. They called him out on the field. The Cardinals did challenge. Derek Gould asked Ollie after the game what explanation he got as to the challenge and why it maybe didn't go the Cardinals' way. The play was not overturned. Ollie, though, calling it after the game a 100% challenge. He was told 100% you challenge. They thought they had it. It was really close. I thought Newt was safe to the naked eye, but I've never really seen a play this close at first base to where I think unless you're slowing it down, you're hitting that enhance button to try and figure out when's the ball in the back of the mitt, when's the toe hit the bag. I think it was one of those that no matter what they had called on the field, that was the call that would have stood. I don't believe they said it was confirmed. I think the challenge was upheld in terms of Newt Barr being ruled out at first base. I don't know how they could have confirmed it. I thought he was safe to the naked eye, but again, they did call out on the field. And it's just like the NFL rules. You have to have irrefutable video evidence. It has to be 100% certain, or they'll stick with what they had because they're going to lean back on the umpire call. And they've done the same thing for years in the NFL. I don't know how sports fans feel about this, and I don't think it's exclusive to baseball, as I mentioned. Would you prefer a system where they say, look, we know you made a call in the field. Go ahead and decide right now with what you're looking at, what the call is. Because I almost feel like that irrefutable video evidence is just a cop-out to say, well, we really can't tell, so whatever the guy on the field called is good enough. Like, if you're going to bother going to replay, I don't know. And I don't feel like super strongly about this, but it is one of those where I feel like in sports, oftentimes we have these calls on replay review where we look at them and we go, we're pretty sure that that's the call. This needs to be called safe in this instance, but because they didn't call it on the field, we have a sense as sports fans with enough experience watching games that have replay review involved, we have a sense by now that's like, yeah, that should be safe, but they're not going to call it that way. And more often than not, as a fan sitting on your couch at home, you're able to predict what they're going to do. It's true in the NFL. It's largely true in college football. And I find it true in Major League Baseball as well. I thought Newt was safe. Let me know in the comment section below, Cardinal fans, what you thought of the play. It's not an excuse. And people love to say in the comments, well, you're making excuses. I don't want to hear excuses. Well, no, it's usually just an explanation of what happened. Like when you're recapping the game, as we tend to do basically every day. It's April 17th as I record this on a Wednesday evening, and I don't think I've missed a day of doing this podcast since March 28th. Maybe one day, and I posted something else to the YouTube channel so you guys could still, probably a low-hanging fruit that day. But we break it down every single day, and so as a result, we're going to be in the nitty-gritty. And so if it was a bad game that day, we'll talk about some of the bad things that happened. If it was a good game that day, we'll tell you the good things that happened and how the Cardinals were able to win it. But generally, it is a day-to-day type of podcast. I'm not making excuses for this team. Their record is their record. It's 9-10. It's a problem. It's a problem to be below 500, but it's not a grave problem. It's not a devastating problem until you're that same record in June and July and you start to get closer toward the meat of the season and you realize, man, there might not be the time to fix this thing. And right now, I would say the status quo is acceptable in so much as they're in the mix. They haven't done anything over these first 19 games to completely tank their chances in 2024, which is a lot different of a conversation than we had about last year at this time, where the Cardinals, I believe, finished April 8-19. Now, already we know the Cardinals are not going to finish April 8-19 because they've got 9 wins. They're 9-10. And I remember doing low-hanging fruit with Charlie Marlowe before the first game, and we talked about this stretch where the Cardinals had quite a few series against would-be contenders. We said playoff teams, didn't think the Marlins would be as bad as they've ultimately turned out to be. But the Athletics were sort of the respite, the reprieve in the tail end of that little run, and then they'll come back home, they'll get the off day Thursday, they'll come home for Friday in the weekend series at Busch, taking on the Brewers, who did win the division last year, so that is technically another competitive team and a team that's playing good baseball in the early going. But I said on low-hanging fruit with Charlie, man, I thought 9-10 would be about where they'd be, and that would be okay. And that's, I think, exactly how I feel right now. I don't feel great about this Cardinal team because there are too many concerns offensively, I think, to feel great. And we'll talk about the pitching as well because Steven Matz didn't have a great day today. It was kind of a quintessential Steven Matz start of he's got good stuff, but oftentimes we only see that good stuff for 4 innings. And when you get into the fifth, man, he tends to sort of come unglued at times. It's not every time he's pitched, but that has been a bit of a theory and a bit of a narrative that I don't think is entirely unfair when it comes to Steven Matz in that fifth inning, ever since he joined the Cardinals, really. And the situation came to pass as well in this one today, as the Cardinals were in a spot where they were leading 3-2, gave up the 2-run homer to Esteri Ruiz in the third. By the way, he never should have been sent to AAA. He's come back, and he was already one of their best hitters for the Oakland A's, and he comes back. He's their leadoff hitter once again, and he's got a couple of home runs in this series to go along with the blazing speed that he carries. So they never should have sent him down. But nevertheless, 2-run shot in the third. Cardinals battle right back. They don't get the shutdown inning. Paul Blackburn doesn't get the shutdown inning. Cardinals put together a little bit of a rally. I thought the swing by Nolan Arenado was one of the most impressive things I've seen from him this year, and I get it. What I have said consistently is Nolan needs to get back to pulling the baseball. That's when he's at his best. But in this particular scenario, it was a clear hit and run. I believe it was Newt Barr on base at the time. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm not going to go look it up. But this is the top of the fourth inning, and it's a situation where the runner is going, and Arenado just needs to put the ball in play. And so he does exactly that. It was a very, and let me know if you caught this comparison as well. I tweeted it out right away because it was the only thing I could think watching Arenado on this swing, kind of inside out to the right side, looping it over the second baseman. It was the most Yadier Molina swing that I have ever seen from Nolan Arenado, and it was damn good baseball. That is a little hit and run action, put the runner in motion, make the defense move, try and Arenado did his job, man. Just lacing a single nice and easy over the right side of the infield, harmlessly into the outfield grass, and you end up having a bit of a rally starter as a result of it. And the Cardinals end up really doing a nice job in that inning, coming through, getting their opportunities, taking advantage of them. They score 3 runs. Contreras doubles down the left field line. Arenado advances from first to third. Newt Barr scores. You have a Gorman strikeout, and that's another thing that we have to talk about as it pertains to this offense. Just too many, and I count Gorman among those guys, even though he's moved down in the order to number 6, too many guys really, really struggling, and Gorman goes 0-for-4 with 2 Ks. That was a chance for him to come through. Wasn't able to do it. The average is down to 191. He's got a 625 OPS. Gorman is officially on that level of guys that I think we are rightfully concerned about with the slump that he's going through. He's always been a streaky player, but the Cardinals need more from him. They just flat out do. It's not complicated. It's like death of a salesman. There's no spite in it anymore. There's no spite in talking about guys that are struggling. But when you look at Goldschmidt and you look at Gorman and you look obviously at the center field situation, Ciani got another start today. I'm not exactly sure what that means for Victor Scott, that he has sat the bench to begin 3 of the last 4 games, but has continuously come in as a defensive replacement. I think they're getting, though, they take that opportunity where they can basically take the bat out of the hands of Ciani or Victor late And they've only really done it when Siani starts. But you can take the bat out of Siani's hands. They have Jordan Walker pinch hit, which gives you maybe an extra late boost. But then right after the hit, you replace defensively again with Victor falling back into the outfield spot and playing good defense. I think from a roster management standpoint, that's fine. But from a development standpoint for Victor Scott, I don't think it's fine. I don't think you can continue to have him sitting with this frequency. If that's going to be the play of it, I get how it might give you a minor advantage to have his speed and the ability to maneuver late in games off the bench. I would prefer if this is the way they're going to use him. And again, this is just a very short sample where it's been a four-game span where he's sat, I think, three of the four. Then maybe you do consider going ahead to send him down and just have whoever else you call up. It doesn't even really make a difference. Edmund and Carlson aren't going to be ready for a while. I don't have either of them returning before maybe the second week of May. Certainly not before May 1st. I would be shocked if either of them did so. And so in that situation, you know, and maybe it's a 40-man move, whatever it is, there's probably somebody down there, even if it's Fermin. And I understand that that might not be as valuable because he's not really an outfielder and you need the extra outfielder, whatever it is. If Scott's going to be a bench player, you probably do end up just sending him down. But I'd like to see him get some more opportunities still because it's not like Siani is hitting either. He's an 0.67 average. Victor Scott's an 0.89. This would be the part where Cardinal fans could come out and say, yeah, we think that obviously the Cardinals should have gone out and gotten another outfielder if they knew the injury situation was such with Tommy Edman. I don't agree with that because this was kind of a worst-case scenario for Carlson, who was going to be your guy, to get hurt in like the second-to-last spring training game. Might have even been the last spring training game, but it was in one of those Mesa, Arizona games against the Cubs. You don't really plan for that. You go into those games, bring in the team that you think you're going to have. They had already sent Victor Scott down, and a freak accident happened. And by then, maybe you say, yeah, they should have scrambled and tried to sign somebody. Okay, I just don't know if that was really realistic at that point, especially because they did want to give Victor Scott an opportunity, and I like that they did. It's not really going too well offensively, and because the rest of the offense is struggling, that will continue to put more and more pressure on a guy like Victor Scott, because people can easily point to his 0.89 batting average and say, see, the offense is struggling, and they keep giving this guy opportunities, and that's the issue. When in reality, and I will get to Steven Matz to start, touch on a little bit of what I thought from him, but in reality, with this offense, the problem is not Victor Scott as much as it is you got a guy batting second in your lineup who's got an OPS that within a couple of days could be below 500 if Paul Goldschmidt doesn't turn it on. He's got an OPS of 516 at this point with a 182 batting average. He reached via walk today in the first inning and then was 0 for 3 the rest of the way with a strikeout. And the strikeout that he had came against one of the A's relievers. I forget which one. It wasn't Mason Miller. But he swung through three pitches that were middle-middle, basically, in the strike zone. They were all three strikes for sure. And they caught meaty parts of the zone. And you're giving him some off-speed, some different types of fastballs. But regardless, when I just look at the location, and he is just up there hacking, swinging through, I don't think I've ever seen that from Paul Goldschmidt. Not to this extent. There were times last year where you go, man, that just doesn't really look like Goldie. Pitches in that location, you feel like he'd be able to identify and make contact with. He is not at that point. The at-bat, the strikeout AB today that we saw from Goldie was one of the tougher watches that I have endured and experienced watching him this year. It's basically, well, how worried are you? How concerned are you? That's going to be the question. I didn't like what I saw today, I'll tell you that. And that doesn't mean it should weigh any more than any other day, any other outcome, but it is getting to the point where it's glaring because every day we look up and the Cardinals are scoring three runs. The Cardinals are scoring three runs. It's not enough. It will not be enough for the Cardinals to be able to get where they want to go. I say it almost every day because every day it seems like they score three runs, so I have to repeat myself. We can count backward. I'm going to give you the run totals. Tell me how many times you hear three or fewer. Three, 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 zero, two, nine, three, three. Three, three, three. I hear 10 of the last 11 games, they've scored three or fewer runs. To their credit, most of the time, the number is exactly three. But I believe I just counted off 10 of 11, if I'm not mistaken on my math there. That is, it's hard. It's hard to imagine the Cardinals, especially this year's team, first of all, any team scoring three runs a game or fewer as often as the Cardinals are and being competitive, it feels even more crazy to imagine that the Cardinals are within a game of 500 right now with that statistic being reality. Because over those 11 games, what was the Cardinals' record? Well, they won five of them. Beat the Marlins, one out of the two that we're talking about over this sample size. It starts on Saturday, April 6th was where this began, this trend. All but one of the games since April 6th have been three or fewer runs offensively. But they beat the Marlins once, they beat the Phillies once, they beat the D-backs once, and they beat the Oakland A's twice. So to have those types of outputs offensively and still be treading water, which the Cardinals are doing, is kind of impressive. It's not making excuses, because I feel like people just get angry and they say, oh my gosh, you're carrying water. No, it's bad that they've only scored three runs in 10 of their last 11 games. Three has been the maximum in 10 of the 11. The only exception, the 9-6 win over Arizona when we saw the only home run by Arenado since August 19th. So when that's going on, and it's just a reality, your offense is just not doing its job, and yet you find a way, thanks to your pitching staff, to win five of those 11. Yeah, you're 9-10. Yeah, it's not ideal, but treading water, it could be a lot worse. Now, this isn't sustainable. If you score three runs every game for the rest of the season, you will lose a good deal more games than you win. That's just my prediction. Because while Lance Lynn is looking good, Sonny Gray is looking good, the rest of your rotation, there are questions. And you just have to hope and pray that the guys we say are looking good remain that way. But let's just, for the sake of this argument, assume that they will and that they'll be fine and that they'll continue to dominate. Lance Lynn was really good. Only 1K, but he gives you those seven innings. You're not going to complain. Sonny Gray hasn't given up a run yet. Eventually, he'll be able to throw more than 75 pitches in a start. And that'll be kind of cool. He threw 72. That's his max. That's what he had in his last outing, his second start. So let's say Lynn and Gibson keep doing what they're doing, which has been really good. That's happening with a team that's still 9-10 at this point. Now, if Sonny had been healthy to begin the season, perhaps he has another start that turns into a win instead of a loss. But you're treading water around 500, a little bit below as we sit here on Wednesday night and talk about it, with those pitching performances being what they are. And given that it is no guarantee for it to stay that way, and even with what you've had as the status quo only getting you to about 500, give or take, I don't think it's a winning formula unless the offense kicks it into gear. And you've got a number of guys right now at the same time who aren't doing it. Goldschmidt with a 182 and a 516 OPS. I mean, he's got to be 300 points better than that on OPS, which he's fully aware of. But I think for the Cardinals to get where they want to go, and people say move him down in the lineup, it's only been, you know, 3 weeks, whatever it's been. I'm okay with not moving Goldschmidt down in the lineup yet, but there will come a point where you go, if this is what he is, you're going to have to make some changes. And like I said, I wish it were the case that I could tell you today, oh, it looked like he was about to kind of come out of it. Not really. Not really. The tough strikeout was an AB that just didn't look like Goldschmidt. Donovan's, his numbers are kind of sinking a little bit. They were in the high 800s for OPS. He's at 766 now. Arenado is coming alive. He goes 1-for-3, had a walk as well today. He's up over 700 pretty safely on OPS. Contreras has been great. 2-for-4, I think two doubles today for him. He's up to a 937 OPS. We mentioned Gorman's struggles. Mason Wynn's looking pretty good. His batting eye, man. He goes 0-for-2 today and struck out both times, but he had two walks as well. He's got a great batting eye. Jordan Walker hitting 180, 546 OPS. Burleson, they're trying to find him some occasional playing time, but his overall numbers are a sub-600 OPS. I mean, it's half the lineup. It just continues to be what it is. I do want to mention, though, with all of that going on, the guys who are producing consistently, you got to find a way to get him in the lineup. It's just all there is to it. Ivan Herrera is one of those guys. He rakes, man. Nice base hit today. I mentioned that three-run fourth inning. He drove in a couple of the runs there. He places the ball where it needs to go. Base hit up the middle. I wonder how often they'll start to shade him a little bit more up the middle, because we've seen him do that a number of times. Talking about the defense, maybe trying to pseudo shift a little more against Devon Herrera, but he came through and continues to come through for the Cardinals offensively. And that's why he's, you know, he's batting seventh today. We've seen him bat higher than that even at times this season. 8.11 OPS, 1-for-3, a couple of RBIs, and also reached via walk today as well, hitting .275. So he's been pretty darn good. Something I do feel like I need to mention, though, and for a little bit, and it's still the case that we're not going to overreact to it, but the reality of what's going on with Ivan Herrera behind the plate, he can't throw out any base runners. That's starting to become a glaring issue that I think teams are aware of, and they're going to start to run with impunity a little bit because they don't think he can catch them, and they might be right. I'm checking out the StatCast numbers here. I don't know why they have it framed this way, but it lists stolen base attempts of second base specifically. I want to know if they're stealing third off of him too. But nevertheless, Ivan Herrera on this leaderboard is 0-for-7 catching base runners trying to steal. I don't know if that's updated today. I would think with it being StatCast, it would be updated live. It feels like it's been more than seven, though, honestly. And I think there's been a couple of third base that they've gotten off of him as well. I think I noticed it first in the Marlins series. If I'm blanking on that, I apologize. But it seemed like teams are going to start to really test it with Ivan Herrera. And Ollie has been asked about it. So for fans who would say, why doesn't the media ask the tough questions? Ollie has been asked about this topic. It's just one where he's coming along and they want to keep him confident. They've kind of wanted to say, let's focus on maybe one thing at a time. We know you're a very good, capable hitter. Focus on your command of the game as a catcher, managing the pitchers, framing the pitches, all of those things. Like, let's get you good at those things. I think an emphasis on throwing out runners is going to be maybe the next thing on his plate as he's continued to improve in the other areas. But the other side of that is, you know, in the time being, I think position players with any degree of speed, if they get on first base, they're going to try and test Ivan Herrera, and there may not often be a lot the pitchers can do about it if he's struggling in this area. And with Wilson Contreras, he is a guy that can manage the running game pretty effectively. And Cardinals fans, having Yadier Molina all those years to watch, are used to that really just not being much of a factor. But with Herrera, I think he needs to be in the lineup. I don't know what the answer is on a daily basis, but I do think he needs to be in there, at least for the time being, while he's swinging it well and the rest of the lineup collectively is not. It would just make sense that he's a guy that you got to find a way. And they found a way today to get him in there. He was the catcher. You had Wilson DH. You had Nootbaar in right field. You had Donovan in left field. So there are ways to make that work. Is it going to be rotating off days for Paul Goldschmidt? Can one of the catchers play first? Or do you put Donovan at first base, and they don't really have a... I guess you could go Burleson in left field. Maybe Burleson is the obvious answer at first base if you're trying to get his bat in the lineup, but we're talking about the catcher Herrera at this point, trying to get him in there. So I don't really know what the answer is, because the Cardinals really do have more than nine guys on a daily basis that they'd like to get in there. It's not always working out that way. And when you consider center field, is Victor Scott / Ciani to this point? Neither of those guys are producing offensively. Will there come a moment where the Cardinals say, we may need to reevaluate what we're looking at, what we're getting out of these positions? Yes, the defense is valuable, but maybe we say we'll take our chances and kind of go back to a status of need to worry about the offense and get the bats going. That's kind of the way they prioritized things last year, and it didn't really work out. They didn't mind sometimes having an outfield defense that you look from left to right and say, that's not really going to be able to help out your pitching staff. That's not really going to be a group of guys that you expect to track down balls in the gap, etc. So I think the Cardinals are going to be hesitant to go that route. We haven't seen Nootbaar in center field yet. If you were to do it, you could say, yeah, Donovan is a pretty good, capable outfielder. He won a gold glove for his utility work. You could put him in left and Newton center and Jordan in right. You know, we'll see. I just don't know if that's going to, if you're feeling happy about the way the pitchers are performing, I think you'd be remiss to not recognize the role that good, quality, consistent defensive play behind those pitchers has had. That's been a role. It's been a factor. And I think it would be a mistake to ignore that. I will say Mason Winn, I feel like he was a little bit today, had the throw where he sort of double clutched it and wasn't able to throw out. It was a tough play, one that they posited on the broadcast. Maybe Arenado cuts it off if there's anybody else playing shortstop. but he knows and respects the arm that Mason Wynn has. But the double pump, I think it's a matter of he's trying to set his feet, and he does a nice job of that. But not always can the arm make up for it when you're taking time on some speedy base runners. But this is some minor stuff. Like, I bring it up because we do a daily podcast, but please don't take it out of context or take it further than it needs to go. We're just saying we'll be keeping an eye on Mason Wynn's development defensively with closing out some of these plays that would be really nice plays, but we're seeing either the throw be errant as it was earlier in the series, or this one was just a little bit delayed in the instance that I'm thinking of from today. But then on a double play turn, Gorman as well had a bit of a flub where he could have gotten the out at first base. I think he would have had time to do it, but dropped the ball after the feed from Mason Wynn. So they had the forced out at second base. But what ends up happening is, because of the situation where Herrera has struggled to throw out base runners, the guy who was not doubled up on because Gorman dropped the ball, he steals second, and then they get a base hit later on in the inning that allows that run to come across. It was an insurance run by that point. The Cardinals didn't end up scoring more than three anyway, but it's just one of those things that it's a nice way as an example to show why defense is so important, and that it's something that the Cardinals, I think, are right to consider prioritizing. But with the numbers being what the numbers are offensively, what is your concern for this team as some of their key leaders as well? Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Gorman, you know, guys that are going to be needed to be tremendous in this lineup. They're not really producing right now, and we're looking at a Cardinal lineup that ranks 29th in baseball in homers. Only 13 homers hit, only the White Sox are worse. Again, I get it. Everybody loves that Whitey ball style, and it would be nice if they were consistently deploying that and doing it effectively, but you also got to be able to hit some home runs and have some damaging at-bats in games at times in order to be able to get the job done and win as many as you want to. They're 24th in OPS with a 653 collective OPS for the team, and in runs scored, they're tied for 23rd, according to this MLB.com list, which I do think updates live. So they're tied for 23rd, 70 runs in 19 games. 70 runs in 19 games, that's just a sliver above 3.5 runs per game, if I'm doing that math right. But you haven't had, in my opinion, the number of 4-run games, 5-run games, and 6-run games that you need. It's nice to score 9 every once in a while, but it doesn't really come out in the wash to score 9 and then score 3 and say, hey, we're averaging 6, which they're, of course, not doing. They're very rarely scoring more than 3. Once in their last 11 games have they outpaced a 3-run output, and it was the time they scored 9. But the Cardinals have to, their next step offensively, get these guys going, obviously, the guys that are supposed to carry you. But maybe in so doing, you find ways to, maybe this inning you manufacture a couple of runs, like we've seen them do. But then a couple innings later, you find a way to get to a pitcher. You're swinging at the pitches that are effective in the zone that you think you can do something with. And maybe you do find one. You run into a homer every now and again. It's kind of the way it feels right now. The Cardinals are just running into home runs on rare occasions rather than it being a major part of their game. But they're not taking full advantage. They're doing a decent job manufacturing runs, I will say that. But the frequency of guys being on base to manufacture at times, it doesn't always happen a lot. And then today, a day where it does happen, where you had 6 hits and 5 walks against the starter who didn't make it out of the 6th inning, you still only find a way to come up with 3 runs. The Cardinals didn't do enough. A couple of double plays put them in bad situations, and that happened from the very beginning of the game. The double play involving Nupar that, again, on review, I thought, yeah, I don't know. That he might have been safe. The Cardinals did challenge. They lose the challenge. All they thought it was 100% challenge. Like, that was just one of those situations. But, man, the Cardinals did not be able to close out this series sweep. I couldn't send the sweeps aren't that hard tweet. But, Cardinals fans, let me know what you think about where the team stands right now. You get the off day on Thursday. We'll continue to put some content on YouTube as we go along. Let me know in the comments, too, if you've got any special requests for the types of content that we could potentially do here on the channel, and anything you like. I read all the comments, so let me know. If you got an idea, I'm game to hear it. But that is going to do it for this edition of the show. I appreciate you guys as always, and we'll talk to you next time on Be Shafe Daily. Peace.